This is Live at Politics and Prose, a program from Slate and Politics and Prose Bookstore in Washington, D.C., featuring some of today's best writers and top thinkers.
I'm pleased to welcome Nina George to Politics and Prose. George is a journalist, writer, and storytelling teacher who has written 27 books, as well as feature articles, short stories, and columns. Her previous book, The Little Paris Bookshop, spent over a year on bestseller lists in Germany and was a bestseller in Italy, Poland, and the Netherlands. Now, in The Little French Bistro, George tells the story of Marianne, who, after a dramatic episode on the banks of the Seine, runs off to Brittany to escape her loveless marriage. At a restaurant called Armour, Marianne is able to rediscover her past, carefree self amidst good friends and good food. Kirkus Reviews writes, George's engrossing novel is as much about indulging the senses with succulent dishes and dazzling sights as it is about romance and second chances. With a profound sense of place and sensuous prose, the novel functions as a satisfying virtual visit to the French Riviera. Hopefully we'll get to go there tonight. Now please join me in welcoming Nina George.
So, hello everybody. Hello. Oui, bien sûr, bonsoir. vous parlez du français aussi? Quelqu'un parlait du français? Ah oui, un petit peu. Und spricht auch irgendjemand Deutsch wohl möglich? Ein ganz kleines bisschen? Nicht. I have to admit you that my body is still thinking it's around midnight. Maybe it's, for me, it's, 1 o'clock in the evening. So I hope you don't mind me if I just sip a drink while reading and talking to you a little bit. I have been arriving to the U.S. on Saturday night after a long flight, 10 hours flight from Paris to come to New York first. Yesterday was my first show in R.J. Julia in Madison, Connecticut. And I have to change my dictionary in the head because I had been living in France now for 2 months. And while I'm searching all the words in English, sometimes the French is coming up and what coming out of my mouth is German. So maybe sometimes it's getting a little bit jolly or I'm looking for the words and so on and so on. What can I tell you about me that is not on the homepage? Okay, I'm Nina George and I'm a journalist since I'm 18. I'm writing under 5 pen names, also like Anne West or like Jean Bagnol. And I was married to a writer named Joe Kramer. I was so in love that I took his name. Yeah, we met and 3 months later we were married and I was so in love still with my hormones all in the head and I took the name Kramer. So under the name Kramer, I was also writing some thrillers and mystery. But under Nina George, this had been the novel before The Little Paris Bookshop. And I want to make a little test with you who have read The Little Paris Bookshop. Okay. For these ones who have not read The Little Paris Bookshop, it's about a man living in Paris. He has a boat, a literary pharmacy, where he's going to sell books like they are medicine for the soul. But this book, The Little French Bistro, I have written before. I have written it about 9 years before, but I'm really happy that I took a long way to now stand at this desk to introduce you to this book, because this, for me, it was the most important book. I had been in my mid-30s and had written about 5 novels, but there were kind of novels that I tried to please the market. If you ever want to write, please do yourself a favor. Never follow the rules of the market. Please follow your inner rules. Because when you're following the market and doing something accident like this, I don't know, what is this called with this prince? He's very rich. Oh, I think, yeah, it might be the one with the sadomasochistic techniques who read this accident. 50 Shades of Grey. Jesus, it was a success, yes. But when you're doing it again, well, there is already 50 Shades of Grey. You don't have to do it again. So do, please, your own. I was 35 when I've written this book, and it took me nearly 25 years to become famous overnight. So I'm a real working writer. I'm also writing reports, essays, columns, and I'm also in the board of the German Pen Club, as well as in the board of the Writers Association in Germany, as well as some several other boards. And yes, you can call me also a feminist, and you can call me also an activist for authors' rights. But now I put another hat on. Now I'm standing in front of you as a writer. Before I start, I would love to tell you how this book is, developing. I want to read a short part. I know that in the US it's totally different than in Germany. In Germany you come into a wonderful bookshop, but I have to admit this is quite a real fabulous bookshop. And this bookshop is also famous in Germany. Prose and politics and the audience and the events and the attitude to speak up, to really speak up, this is even famous in Germany. So I'm so proud to be here. And later on in Germany, I will tell all the people that you have been great. So please be great. So German. The language German is not very famous for his poetic prose. When you look on your own language, English, you have, for example, butterfly. Isn't it soft? Isn't it easy? You can see even the butter flying through the butter. And in French, you have the wonderful word papillon. Papillon. But when it comes to German, you have Schmetterling. So maybe this German sounds a little bit, well, odd to you, but if you don't mind, I would read the first sentences in German so you can get a little bit familiar with the sound. So, es war die erste Entscheidung, die sie alleine traf. Das erste Mal eben, dass sie bestimmte, was zu tun war. Marianne beschloss zu sterben. When it comes to English, it sounds a little bit more smooth. It was the first decision she had ever made on her own. The very first time she was able to determine the course of her life, Marianne decided to die. Why did I choose Marianne? Marianne is a 60-year-old German lady. She does not speak any word of French except of bonjour, but when she is saying that, it's more like bonjour. And we say, when the French say merci, she's saying mercy. And with this lack of French knowing of the language, she goes to Paris, and yes, she is deciding to die. But if that would really happen, well, let me see. Yes, the novel would end at page 6. And my German publisher told me, well, darling, I give you 10,000 euros in advance. I want a full book, not a short story. But when it came to my head, I was sitting in Bretagne. Sometimes people call it Brittany, but to be exact, it's Little Brittany. It's Bretagne. When you imagine the map of France, you see in the north a kind of lying dragon that is biting in the sea. And there, at really the end of the world, in the most western part of France, there is the Bretagne, La Bretagne, the Little Brittany. The people normally say it's the end of the world, but when it comes to the Britain inhabitants, they say it's the beginning of the world. And when you are reading some geological books or something like that, you will find out that this part of Bretagne is made of the oldest stones you have ever seen and found in Europe. So this part of Europe is the first part, and around that Europe was built. And you can feel it over there. It's totally different, I think, to whatever you might have been visited yet. It's wild. The sea is hungry. It's a she, for sure, in the French language. La mer, la mer. And she's a she. And she's sometimes hungry. And sometimes she's so jealous. And sometimes she wants to fight. And sometimes she wants to eat all the land up. and the nights are so dark, and you can see the Milky Way, and it's so soft. But sometimes the wind is also biting you. You will find no skyscrapers anywhere. It's the hardest terrain for sailing. Excuse me. So if there's here any sailors in here, sailor. Oh, yes, please. You too. When you come to Brittany, be aware of this wild she-sea. But after you managed it, please send me a Facebook note. I'm always online, even now. I'm always online. Send me a note. Come to my little white house at the seashore. We will have champagne on the terrace. You have to. But please, this terrain is very, very dangerous. This landscape of Brittany is a kind of secret third protagonist in my novel. So Marianne decided to die, but, well, it doesn't work. I have to, okay. It doesn't work. She is saved by a clochard. It's not a kind of beggar you see sometimes in the streets of also Washington. To be a clochard is also a kind of philosophy. It's meant being free, but for also economical reasons, for sure. Paris is not so romantic as you think. Absolutely not. It's well illuminated, and you can buy things that you don't need to, and you can have a really, really bad café au lait on the Champs-Élysées for too much money. Gosh, and you have all these arrogant waiters when you're not talking French. They prefer not to understand you. So, but she decided to pass away. It didn't work. A clochard is saving her. She went to the hospital. There's a meeting with her husband, Lothar. I have to admit, my relationships wasn't, well, before I met my husband, all my partners were so jealous about my work. But my work is my first lover. I decided when I was a teenage girl, I want to be a writer. And my first love affair told me, why do you want to be a writer? What do you have to say? And I felt so ashamed. But on the other hand, I thought there are people that keeps you down in your world. My husband called them a swarf maker. So they make you really little. They don't want that you're changing. They don't want that you're moving. They don't want that you, well, develop. And my partners had some symptoms of holding me down. And one of them, well, he is now Lothar. That was my revenge. This was my little revenge. Mariana is 60 years old, and when it comes to the question, why does a 30-something writer write about a woman in the autumn of her life, taking the risk to end her life, taking the risk to travel through France, right until at the end of the world without speaking a word French, just escaping from everything. I was raised as a child and educated in a family full of cooks. So I'm a sort of, I'm working since I'm 11 years old in kitchen. With 18, I switched to journalism and writing. But I was living in a small town in Germany that is called Bad Pyrmont. And when you read the word Bad, it's written like bad, but it means bath. You know, that is a village where people can get healthy again. And normally there are a lot of people that had been living a little bit more longer than other people. And when I was a young teenager, I serve all the women and I sit down and I like to listen. I like to listen to people. Well, in this moment now, I have to talk. I'm a little bit talkative, I know. But I love to listen to people. And I found it more interesting to tell a story how a woman, in the autumn of her life, starts to break out. Because the cage she had built around her for years and decades, it's more difficult to have a break out. And as I listened to all these ladies, I found something out. Age is just a number. And we have so much in common. I'm now 44. But there are feelings that are so similar to one who is 14 or 44 or 64. It's like being in love, but the one which you love is not loving you. It's the same old wound that is touching. Or the question, did I become the person I should have become? Well, you can ask yourself this question at any age, even if you're a man. Excuse me. I don't know how many husbands here are today because your wife told you, please, we hadn't done so many things in the last weeks. Please come with me and we can have some dinner afterwards and some champagne. Yesterday I was asked if I can tell some French secrets and I was nearly, I said, well, put some champagne on everything and it works. But then I decided to tell, okay, French secrets, I have a beauty secret, two lipsticks and a lover. If you don't have a lover, just take three lipsticks. Just for the day, for the night, and for the evening. Okay. I wanted to tell a story about this wild old landscape. When you're coming there, it breaks you up. I hope this metaphor I try to explain is fitting with that. But it feels always when I'm going there after I had been in Berlin doing my advertising advisory things for all my associations, working with politicians, being so brave and being so rational and being so cool and being so blah, blah, blah. I go to Brittany and everything is striped down. Everything is peeled down, all the facades, all of this rational thing, and I go back to my own demons. I always hope that I can lock them anywhere, but when I'm in the Bretagne, the landscape, the wind, the wilderness, the nature is stripping all down and I'm reaching myself. So, when you want to get rid of yourself, come to Brittany. So you find yourself maybe there again. So this was the landscape I want to put this woman in. Inner caged woman, this elder woman, not old woman. I mean, 60 is nothing. My man had just, and please don't tell him that I told you. We had a birthday party in Sanary-sur-Mer. Some of you who have read the Little Paris Bookshop will remind yourself of Sanary-sur-Mer. We had been there for 2 weeks together with some people out of France, together with some people out of New Jersey. So it was a wonderful birthday party and he went 60. And when you look at him, 60 is nothing. 60 is in the middle of everything. You're a bright flower with 60. I'm really happy that, well, I will be 60 one day. But nevertheless, it's hard to break up when you're in that age. And the third thing I wanted to tell is love in trouble. All these novels I also have read and also enjoyed is about love with a happy end. But I think love with a happy end is fictional. Yeah. And so I put around Marianne an ensemble of wonderful, strange, eccentric, direct people who has also some secrets of different sort of troubled love. And if I am so smart and would find the page again, yesterday I used to search and search the whole evening for the pages. This is about cooking. We should talk about cooking too. Oh, yes. So, just imagine the woman who was trying to suicide herself in the Seine, who was putting herself on a road movie through France without speaking any word of French, meeting nuns, eating an oyster for the first time, walking through these wild forests, being at the end of the world, and she wants to give herself to the sea? Well, and then she reached this little town, Caedruc. Caedruc is also real. You will find it also in the near of Quimper or Lorient. And it's a village where all the boats are snuggling together and you hear all these little noises, all these metal lines are doing, and the sea and the sun when the sun goes down, the sea is looking like a silk that is smoothly, very smoothly moving. And she stands there and crying because it is the most wonderful place in the world she had ever been. And she realized, I never had been on any places where I should have been. Why do I waste my life? My life is like a book and the pages are blank. The pages are blank. Why do I have forgotten to be the main figure in my own book? A thunderstorm is coming in that scene and she tries to find any help, but there's nobody at this village except of a cat. And this cat is trying to give her a signal that there's a boat, and she's slipping on the boat, and the thunderstorm is rushing over this little village, and she puts off all her clothes, snuggled into this little cabin, and fell asleep. And the next morning she's wake up, and she's in the middle of the sea on a little tiny white boat, and there's nothing around her. In the meantime, I just want to introduce you to, two typical Breton men. Yeah, I think I have the time. Paul drove into Kedrick. It was always best to sober up and let the wind and the sun wring the night from his body. His old friend Simon had left coffee, milk and pancakes on the kitchen table that morning, along with a bottle of Père Magloire Calvados. One of the chickens had jumped up onto the table and was observing his egg. Despite a quick nap on Simon's couch, Paul felt as if he had been dragged through a hedge backwards. Maybe he could convince Simon to let him help out in the farm shop later. After Simon had stopped going out to sea to work, he had converted his fisherman's cottage in Kerbuin into a mini market and now lived with his chickens in the kitchen. Simon sold all kinds of stuff to gullible tourists. Ice honey, for example, collected by frost-resistant bees. Yes, yes, from flowers that grew in glaciated valleys in the Pyrenees. Yes, sure. The tourists didn't need to know that it was just tangy buckwheat honey. Then there was Simon's scam with the menhir seeds. And then here, just a footnote, when you come to Brittany, you will find all these strange stones. They're everywhere, millions, thousands of them, and nobody knows why are they there. Has anybody planted them? Is it out from the Neolithic times or from the Celtic? Nobody knows why they are. So, he had the idea with the menhir seeds. A paper sachet emblazoned with a drawing of the fields of megalith stones in Karnak, containing a few grams of granite that he had trickled from a crack in the outside wall of his house. But then you have to throw them into your garden. Yes, like this. Maybe you can do also some abracadabra if you like. Menhirs grow very slowly for the first 100 years, you have to know. Simon would explain to his deferential patrons. It would help if they used good old Celtic soil from Little Brittany as fertilizer, which meant he could sell them a handful of dirt from his garden to go with the bit of stones. But the best things about Simon's little store was that there were so many women in summer, and they found everything so, oh, this is nice, and so sweet. They wore short dresses and dreamed of catching a Breton fisherman and having their very own ladies' chatterley lover moment. Simon didn't really like talking to all these tourists, especially these sophisticated Parisian women. Oh, mon Dieu, les Parigots, oh, ça m'énerve! And he wasn't keen on pretending to be a rustic hunk. But for Paul, the gathering of so many different women in one place was a delightful occurrence. So he pulled alongside Simon's battered Citroën, whose bonnet was pointing towards Armour Terrace. Bonjour, Monsieur Paul, called Laureen, the very young and very jolie waitress from Armour, as the former legionnaire got out of his car. Paul went over to stand next to her. Oh, bonjour, Laureen. He peered at the mouth of the Avan, of the river Avan, but all he could see was the Gwen too making for the quayside. "There!" cried Lorraine. Her overexcitement made Paul feel a little bit slightly dizzy. Simon was standing on the Gwen too, yes, and always on his boat, and next to him... "There!" repeated Lorraine. "Yoo-hoo!" No. "Oh, no! A woman!" Paul gasped. How on earth had Simon managed to pick up a woman and take her on a boat trip before lunch? The traitor! Hadn't they sworn last night to each other with Calvados Magloire that woman were to play no further part in their lives? Well, no major part at all. So Simon really picked up Marianne out of the sea. And this is the beginning of, the real story. Because Marianne is mistaken as the new chief, not the new chief, the new chef cook. And, yes, she can cook. She can cook because she has done this every year and every second and every day to Lothar. Lothar is, by the way, a sort of general at the German military. And sometimes Marianne is thinking, when I'm leaving him, well, he gets lost in supermarkets between the tampons and the tea. But maybe he will manage it. So she started to work in this kitchen. She is learning all the Briton way to cook. And every day she decides not to seduce her. She goes every day to the sea. She learns to play accordion again. And every day is something new that makes her, well, tomorrow. Yeah, if I do, we'll do it tomorrow. I will give me to the sea. Yes, tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. But this tomorrow never comes. For sure you have to read it on your own, why and because. But you will find out that this is a story also about friendship that grows, because friendship, I think, is the most patient form of love. You will see how everybody is struggling with love. You will be filled up, I think, also with the scents, the aromas of Breton cooking. You know, I'm cooking by myself, and during the research, for sure, I learn how to cook the Breton way, and maybe I will let you out of this talking. Yes, I'm just 20 second minutes. Maybe I have two more. And I will tell you something about the French, the Breton way to cook meat. Is there anyone who is doing barbecue cookers here? No? How do you do your steak? We will see how Jean-Remy is doing it. Jean-Remy is the little chef. Jean-Remy was standing at the stove in Amor's kitchen, his injured hand hooked into the waistband of his jeans. He looked at her and he is surprised of this hunger in the eyes of this once lost woman. As the first steak orders began to come in, Jean-Remy beckoned Marianne to his side. "Okay, no sear marks in my kitchen. That's the kind of torture housewives and barbecuing husbands inflict on steak. It's barbaric. Watch me. You need an oval pan, a little pan, and then you take a little butter. Just medium heat, not too much hotness. That way the batter stays close, very close to the steak, inside of spreading out, messing around with the shallots and getting burnt. Do you understand?" "Oui." Marianne watched him with fascination. He didn't wear the meat out, he caressed it. Soon he lifted the steak out of the pan onto a hot plate and pushed it under a three-level grill set to 80 degrees. Yes, and the receipt is also in the book. He left it there to cook a little longer and then gave it another minute on a warm plate before arranging the trimmings around it. Voila! Any other way of cooking and the steak curls up and dies. So if all you've ever done until now is toss meat onto the grill, forget it! Try it even once, lady, and I kill you. Huh? He drew his hand across his throat like a blade. Marianne blushed. Then Jean-Remy fetched a chopping board with squid tentacles on it and set it down among the shadows near the doorway. Seconds later, a little orange-white cat emerged from its hiding place near the herbs. It waggled its backside in the sun as it gnawed away at this little delicacy. So, am I in time, Kathy? So, perfect. I would love to tell you more and more and more. In Germany, I do a 90-minute show just sitting down there with a glass of water, wearing all my black stuff, being very existential, and nerving you with 90 minutes reading what's meant to be 40 pages. So I thank you for your patience. I did a little bit improvisation, and I would love to hear if you want to ask me anything so I can train my jolly English a little bit more. Yeah, there are microphones just, and they're on.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me, Major Tom?
So I found the couple, Emile and Pascal.
Yeah, Pascal and Emile.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I found them to be absolutely fascinating. Of all the couples in the book, and there are many, many. There we go. There are many interesting characters. But I found their relationship and their friendship to be intoxicating. Were they characters that you wove into the story, or did you know you wanted to start with that type of couple?
The story came up 2 years before I started to write them. I was in the middle of Little Brittany. I was hanging around at a bar tabac. A bar tabac is a mix of, where can you buy drinks? Where can you buy cigarettes? Where can you bet on horse races and so on? And it was a Monday morning. It was 12:30, I think. And I watched five or six elder people wiggling out of the bar tabac. And they were a little bit tipsy. And they helped each other. Oh, I think we should go back and take the champagne, encore. And I thought, wow, this couples, this friendship, there is so an intimacy in between them. And I wanted to create, and half it comes to me by watching this people, how they interact with each other. I wanted to create a couple that have done 40 or 50 years together, betraying each other. Well, it was she was stewardess, and she was fabulous. Now she is ill, she has an Alzheimer disease. But this love in between them, Pascal is ill, but Emile says to himself, I know this woman, and I know every variation of that woman. I know every face, I know every development, and I'm a lucky man that I had the chance to be with this woman in all her life, to see who she had been. She had been great. She had been triste aussi. She had been a wonderful flower. She had been my wife. She had been a lover for other men, but whom? Well, these other men, they have just good taste. Who cannot love my woman? You have to know in France it's not usual to have affairs, but it's not such an affair to have an affair. So, and this growed love, they let each other the free space. I think, and that is my new novel also about, that every one of us has a hidden space in us where we, well, just be ourselves. And it depends on how big your space is. Maybe it's just this tiny. It's all only your thoughts. But maybe it has also the space of a hidden room in a hotel where you meet some strangers to make love to them. So, and they, each other, they let the other have space. And I wanted mm-hmm. to tell that because this is a part of love that is not very often told in novels. Love is sometimes told like an illusion, just you and me forever. But life isn't like that. And I wanted to show, yeah, I had that in mind. And I needed a Briton guy that he was, Emil at the first is very, very angry because Marianne is German. Excuse me, German, French, World War? So,
yeah.
Thank you. Why? Excuse me, this was a long answer.
Thank you.
Thank you. I can even answer more shortly, but beware, I'm not lying. Huh? Even not on politics or money or lipsticks.
Good evening. The last 10 years have been a difficult story for European integration. Mm-hmm. You are a German woman. You write about Île-de-France and Bretagne. Your books are bestsellers in the Netherlands and Poland and Italy.
And even in China, since I know since
well, that's
an
not,
hour.
That's not European. what are you cognizant of your contribution in Europeanization? Are you interested in it? How do you think about that?
Now I put my other hat on. And I take water for this. As I told you, I'm also in the board of the Pen Club Germany and as well as the Writers Association in Germany. So everything what comes up with the refugee crisis, with all the things that are happening in front of our door, the right-wing parties that are in every country are growing, I'm for sure interested in that, and I'm a political activist working on that, doing resolutions, manifestos, going on demonstration, speaking out loud and in newspapers and so on. But there's a but. I like to write these novels because this helps me to flee and to escape from this world. And I think everybody needs sometimes the time to escape into another world. But in my crime novels, I'm also writing short stories, crime novels, and so on. They are always contemporary, and they are always dealing with the situation we have. But they are only small stories. But for me and for my readers, I think sometimes there's a need to escape, and you can escape in my book. I'm drinking wine now, so I put my writer hat now.
Okay, well, you can get creative then. I love your writing style. It's wonderful. I just finished my first book of yours, and I'm sorry I hadn't found you earlier. What do you read?
Oh, I prepared it. and I had a short walk in this wonderful bookstore. I would love to be locked in this night. Could we manage it? Well, I don't know. So, when I'm on tour, I'm always reading e-books. So e-books are also stories. Don't look on the medium; just look at the content. So I was rereading François Sagan, Bonjour Tristesse. I was young when I read it before, and now I'm 44 and I'm a professional writer, and now I can see, my goodness, she was great. I started to read again Anna Seghers with Transit, because Transit was written during the World War II and all the refugee crisis when all the exile writers came from Germany and tried to escape into the world. I'm reading Véronique Olmy, A Man, A Woman. Kenneth Harouf, Our Souls by Night. I was reading Sweet Bitter. I think you have it over there on the first table. And I start to read more and more women. Because, as you know, I'm also a feminist and I'm an activist for women's rights, but that also means the rights of women's writers. And in Germany, I don't know, maybe in America it's the same, women writers earn less money. They are not getting the same prizes. I think men won 5.5 times more often high, well, prize prizes than women. And I start to read more women to talk about what are women writing to spread the word of women. So I'm now, in these months, I'm really concentrated on reading women again. And if you want to read Véronique Olmy, it's not easy. It's a kind of literature that is breathless on the one hand, but she goes into the details, and she just is telling a whole novel about an afternoon between a woman and a man in a hotel room. And she gets more intimate and more details, and it's breathless also. So if you want to discover something different, please try to read Véronique Olmy. That's my recommendation for this evening.
I don't know if, yeah, this Hi. Is on. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for a wonderful presentation and performance. This is a sort of a facile question, but are there any French or Mediterranean writers who've written anything in Germany?
That is based in Germany, like I...
Yeah, Their Escape.
Yeah. Let me think about it.
Even children's books or any?
I guess there must be some. Maybe two. Or even three. But they don't come in my mind. Yeah. But you pointed it really out, because I have some colleagues who are writing under pen names, nom de plume, like Jean Bagnol, Sophie Bonnet, Jean-Luc Balanec, Nicolas Barrault. That sounds very French, but they're all German people. And I don't know if you mentioned they're all starting with a B. I don't know why. But that a French writer writes something that is based in Germany, that is not very often, no? Mm-hmm. Huh. Just maybe it's a niche in the market. Maybe I should put myself, well, I could choose a French pen name and then... No, that's complicated.
That's not going to happen.
And then everybody is asking, wow, this French lady, how could she know this so well? Yeah, I should try that. Has anybody any recommendation from a French writer for a story that are based in Germany? Okay, we have to do the research. And maybe a little section. So very little section. So, religion, money, sex... Lipsticks. We can talk about everything. Maybe you need alcohol for that.
You mentioned that you write crime novels, mm-hmm. contemporary ones, and I'm wondering why do you think they are so popular, crime novels, as opposed to other kinds of novels?
I know my colleagues, which are writers, we have also an association of crime writers in Germany with 800 members or so. They write because they can control the death. And maybe for the reader it's similar. Another one is dying. Not me. Hooray. Maybe it's that. Or maybe it's the old battle in between black and white and good and bad. I don't know. Because sometimes when you're reading contemporary novels, contemporary crime novels, the bad is sometimes also winning. It has to be like that. So every other thing is an illusion. But when it comes to thrillers, I think most of the people love to read thrillers because they're, they have a heartache. Is heartache the right word for mm-hmm. Liebeskummer? Mm-hmm. Okay, so... Mm-hmm. When I am a literary pharmacist and somebody comes to me and says, I'm so sad because he don't love me, what should I read? Some romance? And I said, no, don't romance. You need something where the blood is spreading out and all the bones are breaking. So here's a thriller with a lot of blood and Walking Dead. And yes, this is good for you. And yeah, and maybe this is a kind of escape too. We are all packed in our daily routine with the work and the children, and have you been shopping, and what do we do with our parents, and where do we go in our holidays? Oh, Jesus. And you can escape in a crime novel, in a thriller novel. Yeah, it's an escape too. maybe it's for, I don't know if it's for men more interesting. Today in the morning, I just read in a report that woman would prefer cozy crime. I don't know. And the man, thriller crime. I don't know if this is real. Is any woman here that prefers thriller and hard-boiled crime than cozy crime? Hands up. Yeah. So, huh? Okay. Where's the thriller section? So these ladies might be... You're welcome.
Hi. Hi. Thank you so much for your books, because now I have more books to give to people as medicine. So thank you. And
champagne? Do we have champagne?
Speaking of good medicine and good and bad, oh, I'm sorry. I'm so impressed with the way that France feeds their school children.
Oh, and yeah.
Compared to what we do here, it's the difference between love and kind of poisoning. I'm a pediatrician. Oh. It's a huge problem. What do they do in Germany?
I'm living half part in Berlin and half part in Brittany, in Little Brittany. And when I'm coming back to France, for me it's a relief because the children are so well educated. So well educated, but also so loved. For example, when a German couple with his children comes up to the beach, they always say to the children, "Don't do that! Don't climb on that! Be careful!" And the children is totally stressed. In France, when a French family is coming to a beach, the little one will have, well, they are just free. Yeah, climb on that. Yeah, just go swimming. But when there are not holidays, not vacances, the children are so well educated because I ask my French teacher, I have a French teacher for sure, why? And he said to me, well, people feel ashamed if they are going on the nerves on others. They really feel ashamed. Most of the French people and even the Briton people are very polite, and they hate to go on the nerves on others. So they try to educate their children so well. I found it very practically that if you raise a child as a French woman, you can give it to the maternal school very, very early to go back to the job. So you will find very emancipated women in France. There's no... you find them in every métier, in every job. So... but there's also a but. Sometimes when I'm with French families, the children are so well educated that I sometimes want to grab them and say, just be wild, do something that's going on my nerves. Do something. But they're, well, really well educated. In Germany, we have a lot of helicopter parents. They have a kind of radar that goes like, where's the kid? Here's the kid. Where's the kid? Here's the kid. And they want to talk Chinese before you're 4 years old, and you have to do also Tai Chi and Qigong, and you have to do this and this and that. And they can't say no to them. They ask, I often hear on the streets, mothers asking their child, so my darling, what do you want to do now? And I think, don't ask them! They can't know in this age, what do you want to do? So, darling, now, should we have now lunch or should we just play? You can't do that to a child. You can't. So now I have to admit I have no children. So maybe I'm not the best advisor for this. But this is one of the most difference between German and France, yes. In France, the children are well educated, and in Germany, they're stressed. In German, the word is überfordert. I should use my dictionary to look it up, what überfordert means.
Ms. George, do you mean well-educated or well-behaved?
Help me with the difference.
Educated means books, learning.
Okay. Okay. Ah, good. Thank you for this, because you pointed it out. It's well behavior, but education too, because when I come to France and I say I'm a writer, they say, oh, just sit down, tell me everything, because art and culture is so elementary for the French people. When I'm saying in Germany at a cocktail party or something like that, so Nina, what are you doing? Yeah, I'm a writer. Yeah, writer. And do you publish now? Yeah, I did. And should I know you? No, not you. So there's really well behavior as well as later on when they go to school, well educated. They are raised with culture. Culture means painting, eating, reading, music. There's no bourgeoisie in art. In Germany, we have this bürgerliche Mitte, this bourgeois establishment that goes to the opera and everybody thinks, oh yeah, they're a little bit snobby. In France, you will never find that because everyone is going to the opera in the t-shirt and in jeans because it's wonderful music. So, yeah. But the French people also have some failures. Don't think that I'm so in love with them. Bien sûr, mais non. Non.
Hi. Yeah. I wanted to say thank you. I found the Little Paris Bookshop actually in a store in Dublin recently. And so it was thrilled to see that you would be here today. I loved the scene where Jean Perdu finds healing in the sea. Mm. And when you spoke about Brittany being a character in this book, I think a lot of France is such a character in that book. Do you have travel writers that you recommend? Or is it mostly just drawn on your own experience?
I think everything or nothing is biographic, but everything is me. Every writer has his own, in German it's a kind of word, a filter. So everything everything is filtered through myself, through my soul, through my principles. And the way I am telling stories is just, well, it's me. And I have to admit, I'm in the Chinese horoscope, I'm the element water. So I'm home in water. I had been spending now the last 2 weeks in Sanary-sur-Mer and every day swimming in the sea. And the Mediterranean Sea is a little bit different from the Atlantic. The Atlantic has more tensity. It really carries me and is wild too. And the Mediterranean Sea is a little bit more light. When you grab into it, it seems like it's lighter. But I'm always doing this, that I'm closing my eyes, spreading out, and let me carry. Let myself be carried and get to back to this faith into the sea, into the nature, into me. The Little Paris Bookshop I had written after my dad had died. And my dad was my best friend. He was my mirror. And my home. So I went to the south of France to find love and life again. And this was most important part of the story because the weeks I spent there to come to life again. This is exactly was that Jean Perdu is doing. So, yes, this part is maybe biographic.
Yes. Could you please spell, make sure that we can find that Véronique Woman book. The last name of the author is Véronique, and the name of the book is Woman.
Olmi, Véronique is the prename, and Olmi, O-L-M-E, is the last name. Véronique Olmi.
Oh. And the book is called Woman?
A Man, a Woman.
A Man, a Woman.
Ein Mann, eine Frau. I can look it up if the title first is translated, and second, if it's the title is also the same. Véronique Olmi. She also had written in Germany the title In That Summer. It's a story that is based in the Normandy. Three couples are spending together a weekend on the 14th of July, the big fête de la France. You have to read that too. It's a little bit more light, but you can Well, it's a story about couples, relationship, friendship. It's very intense, very... Wow, I love this fine finesse, the details, the nuances. She's great. Please read her.
Thank you.
I have to look it up where the titles in the U.S. Oui, madame. I have a French teacher. He is at this time now. He is sleeping. But he was very brave. He was always typing to me and WhatsApps. Where are you now? What are you doing? Do they learn some French words from you? And okay, I would love to teach you two Breton words. So I can tell him tomorrow, yes, in Washington now they know two Breton words. So the first one is very, very important. It's very important. It's the word Yamat. So please repeat. Yamat. It means cheers. And the second one is when you're leaving a boulangerie, a café, restaurant, quelque chose comme ça. En français, non. You have to tell the Breton people, qu'en avez-vous? Qu'en avez-vous? It's bye bye. Qu'en avez-vous? Qu'en avez-vous? Perfect. So. It's bye-bye. But it's in Britain, and Britain, the language is quite similar to Gaelic or to Celtic languages, not to French language. It was forbidden for decades in the Britannia to speak any Briton, but now there are schools and they try to reintroduce the Breton language, and sometimes it's sounding like a bun is thrown down an escalier, a Treppenhaus, some steps. It sounds really mad. It's like Pizpian, Konikel, Marikel, Bretzel, Tomtom, Trinchin. So, yeah. What do you think? Is there any question? Do you want to know another French word? Prononciation. Réfrigérateur. That was one of the hardest words for me. Réfrigérateur. My tongue is doing something interesting. And I have to ask you a question. Oh, that is very important. Is anyone of you dancing Tango Argentino? Tango Argentino? Tango Argentine? Tango Argentina? Tango Argentinian style? Yes? I heard a yes? So let's go out to a milonga. I have my tango shoes and the Jefferson. Oh, okay. I thought I can bring the milonga to Washington. Oh, yes? Outside? Oh, Sunday. Today is Monday. Oh, yes, here we have a question. You will dance tango with me now. Okay.
I don't know how to tango, but let's go.
Music.
Your talk has carried us all along, and I just loved your previous book that I read. I thought it was wonderful about the idea of healing through books. Maybe that's because I'm a librarian.
Huh.
Regardless,
huh.
I would like to know what you'd like to write next, or what are you working on?
Okay. In Germany, there had been the next novel just coming out. In Germany, it's called Das Traumbuch, what means Book of Dreams. And I think I'm allowed to say that Crown has already bought the license, and it will come out in 2019. It's absolutely different to the little books, the little French bistro and the little Paris bookshop. It's different, but I think it's my best. And now I'm working on a novel. We found just the title in Germany. It is called Die Schönheit der Nacht, what means Beauty of Night. It will be based in Brittany, Little Brittany again, start in Paris, then again in Brittany. It's about two women, two men. It's about the question, did I become the woman that I should become? There's a woman in my age, 44. There's a younger woman, 20. She's named Julie. the woman my age is named Claire. She's a scientist of behavior and biological reasons for our behavior, so very rationalist. There's a husband, there's a younger man, and there are a lot of secrets and lies and passion and very female moments. And I'm just in the third chapter now. I've written it since February, and I did drafts, and I'm not numerating the drafts, but I give them alphabetical codes, A, B, C, D, E, uh-huh. And after the draft number, H, I, J, J, oh! I now got it in Saint-Henri-sur-Mer. I was writing the first three chapters in just 3 days, and now I got it, and I want to go back and write it until the end of August, then is deadline. Yes, okay. And I hope that Crown will love the beauty of night too, because, wow, it's so sizzling, it's drizzling, it's bristling, it's a lot of sizzling. Yeah. But first of all, the dream, the Book of Dreams, I don't know what will be the title in the US. It's a very strange, this is a very strange book. I don't know if I can pitch it. Even in German, I can pitch it in just 8 seconds. Imagine you can live your life again. To which moments would you go to change something? And would you really change it? Because is there any chance to have a perfect life? Yeah, and put some love on it, and put a 13-year-old boy in it, and put a publisher in it, and put a reporter in it, and just mix it together, and then there is the Book of Dreams. Yeah. Tango. Thank you.
Live at Politics and Prose is a co-production of The Bookstore and Slate.com. For information about upcoming Politics and Prose events, visit politics-prose.com. And please let us know what you think of this program. Our email is podcasts@slate.com.